Welcome to Women Got Game, where we uncover untold stories of extraordinary women in sports across Northwest Ohio and beyond. I'm Sophia Fisher, and we're going to celebrate the evolution of female athletes, coaches, and sports enthusiasts. Let's dive into a world often overlooked in the broader sports narrative. Ready to explore? Let's play. Today, we're talking about NIL, name, image, and likeness. NIL first gained major traction in the U.S. sports landscape in 2021 when the NCAA announced a significant policy change that allowed college athletes to profit from their own name, image, and likeness. I'm pleased to have our guest on the show today, Carolyn Adkerson. She's attending the Fox School of Business and the Executive Doctor of Business Administration program. She recently defended her dissertation titled Beyond Competition, an exploration of how collegiate women athletes navigate name, image, and likeness, or NIL, opportunities as we call it. And she passed. So congrats, Carolyn, and welcome to Women Got Game.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sophia. I am thrilled to be here today and looking forward to a wonderful conversation around the wonderful world of NIL.
Yes, and, you know, I guess really taking a step back so we can have proper introductions here, I think you and I met when we were on it was a sports webinar on NIL, and that's how we connected. You're actually located in Nashville. We kind of found each other in this NIL world, and I think it's really it was really cool, and it's very important, I think, for women in all industries to network and to lift each other up, and I've had such a great experience getting to know you. And as you know, I'm a certified NIL agent within the state of Ohio. It was just great. We connected, hit it off, and we started talking about this landscape of NIL, and I think I was able to introduce you to two of the athletes that I represent, Sammy McConowitz and Sophia Wired, and there are two outstanding University of Toledo Lady Rockets on the basketball team. And incidentally, as you know, I was able to negotiate two cars for actually last year, and then this year it happened again. So Sammy got the car this year, Sophia got it last year with another player, and Hannah Nowoski was the other person who got the car this year. So good stuff, right?
Absolutely. I'm just thrilled to even have met those athletes and just the work that you're doing. I think this is just so important, and seeing these and hearing these success stories will just be so tremendous, especially when we think about women's sports more broadly.
100%. And, you know, really, I want to start by having you tell us, why did you choose NIL and women's athletics for your focus?
I have a little bit of a personal motivation. I am a former athlete. I played through college. I attended Spelman College, where I played basketball. And I just remember there was a pivotal point in my career when I was really curious and interested in going into a professional space and lane for sports, in basketball in particular. And I was at a camp, and I remember being the inquisitive athletes that we were, we asked the ladies there from the WNBA, how much do they make? And the numbers that they shared were startling. It was, you know, it just really transformed how I saw my future. And I actually leaned into academia instead because of this compensation gap that we see across gender lines. And I believe that NIL is actually a leveling opportunity for decreasing that gap so that women are getting more access to better compensation opportunities to make those decisions that I wasn't afforded myself at the time. And so I am all in. I think if you think from a researcher perspective, it's relatable, it's novel, it's new. There's so much to explore. And so it's just a really exciting time to be a part of the NIL experience all across the board.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that, you know, really with you focusing your research on NIL and your findings, I think because it is so early on, I think 2021 was when it really came out, and they refer to it all the time as the Wild Wild West. So with that being said, can you give our audience a brief overview of what NIL means and why it's such a major shift in collegiate sports?
To do that, you know, I'll just have the audience kind of imagine for a second. So imagine going to work every day where your efforts and your identity are crucial to your organization's success, right? So now imagine if your employer used your name, your face, and your unique attributes to make millions of dollars. They do this by launching campaigns, they sell products, and all of this to boost their brand featuring you. Yet you receive nothing from the profits made from your own image and likeness. Like, how would that feel, right?
So yeah,
this
not
is
very
just
good.
An unjust scenario. And the reality for collegiate athletes until, as you mentioned, 2021, with the recent changes that allowed them to earn from their name, image, and likeness. And so a formal definition around what is NIL, it refers to the ability of college athletes to profit from their personal brand and endorsement. And so with these NCAA rule changes, student athletes can now earn money through third-party endorsements and the use of their NIL for advertising purposes. And so this really translates mostly in some top NIL activities, such as posting content on social media, creating content, signing different paraphernalia, or doing even appearances. And it's been just strikingly interesting because within the first year, it was almost estimated at $1 billion of compensation earned through NIL. And then when we look at year two, the estimates go beyond $1 billion. And it's on a trajectory that by year five, they're now estimating almost $2.55 billion, according to Open Doors. And so Open Doors is one of the third-party platforms that athletes are leveraging to not only seek out NIL deals, but also capture the deals that they have received. So when I said estimates previously, NIL is also is a growing science. It's not true to form. So every single deal is not necessarily captured right now. And so these are estimated amounts based on different platforms where athletes have opted in and self-selected to share their data to create these numbers. So just think about all the numbers that are missing. And so it's a wide open space. There's so many nuances within it. And I think it's just exciting and interesting to be engaged and involved in it and watching as it grows.
So let me ask you this. In your research, you know, obviously we were, you know, you'd have to be living under a rock last basketball season watching women play if you didn't know who Caitlin Clark, you know, is, and Angel Reese and so many other players, but we mention them often. We talk about the Clark effect, but really talk to me a little bit about, did you find there has to be disparities in what, obviously you're focusing on female athletes, but in what men are able to pull down in NIL deals versus women?
Yes, absolutely. So continuing to think about the landscape of NIL, NIL really consists of collective and commercial endorsements. So what's an NIL collective? NIL collectives are what I call legal booster clubs. So previous in the student athlete universe, there were people who wanted to pump money in order to have specific athletes on their teams in order to win championships. Well, now through NIL, NIL collectives are very similar in format where donors are generating funds outside of the institution at this point in order to captivate and capture top talent. In fact, NIL collectives shape over 80% of the entire NIL market. When you think of the NIL market, men capture the largest percentage of that NIL collective pot and landscape. Once again, kind of breaking this down, we have collectives versus commercial. Collectives are the biggest pot, but then in that, men collect the most from collectives. But when we look at this commercial landscape, women are actually the leaders. So they're the leaders of the 20% of the market. And so what's exciting when you look at this from, well, I guess there's two sides to the coin. There's one side that's disappointing, and then there's another side that's exciting. So what's disappointing about this is when you look at the quantity of dollars, the actual spend, men are blowing it out of the water. NIL is, football is the king. Football athletes are what you are seeing in the top headlines for, you know, millions of dollars of compensation. They're most of the leaders on the rankings for different NIL compensation totals and the like. But what is interesting is that when you look at the quantity of commercial deals for female athletes, they're actually showing a different story. When you see this, is female athletes are getting more deals, although it's less compensation. And so if we could fix that compensation number, what could that really mean for women's sports and the women's industry more broadly? And that's what I'm here to kind of push through my research and hope to impact and influence this race, this gender equity line.
Yes, and, you know, on the surface, NIL seems really straightforward, but as you just mentioned, there's so many layers of complexity. I think that people don't really realize it at first, and then you do have, you know, universities themselves out fundraising and also for their, you know, arenas and their packages that they offer for marketing as well. It can get very complex, I think, and it can kind of get lost in translation. So with that being said, I want to, you know, throw this out there before we forget to talk about NIL versus portal. What is that? Can you explain to people what's the difference and how is NIL impacted? Or is it obviously, you know, a recruitment tool? Should universities really develop, you know, relationships with NIL agents and other organizations to really help with this? Because I think it is impacting recruiting. And you know, just tell me a little bit about that and if you dove into the portal at all.
What I'll say is that NIL is constantly evolving. And the changes even to the portal, the transfer portal, where athletes are able to go from one institution to another without impacting or influencing their eligibility, has gone through the roof. So they have reduced the window for the transfer portal to help navigate that wild, wild west that you referred to earlier so that it's not so chaotic. NIL is probably the biggest cause or reason for so much activity in the portal. It is being utilized as a recruiting tool for athletes. How this really translates into women is not as prominent as men, but we're actually even seeing NIL influencing decisions of female athletes as well. When we've seen athletes such as Haley Benley go from school to school with different endorsements and opportunities to further advance her NIL brand. And she's even considered one of the top 10 female athletes on the NIL charts. And so it is a driver when it comes to recruiting. I think what's going to be the most interesting is that we're having this conversation as a point in time in what will be history. The NIL is embarking on an even bigger change in the coming months that it's hard to really say what will be the future of NIL in that way. More specifically, there is this house settlement that is scheduled to take place or be defined and confirmed on April 7th of 2025. Some of the details around the house settlement really aim to back pay some of the athletes that missed out on their NIL compensation, and that's up into 2016 due to statutes of limitations. And there's rules around that, and for anyone who's listening that is a former athlete in those years, they're actually allowing for claims to be submitted as we speak. So, you know, I highly recommend that you look into that so that you too can get your earnings that you should have received had you had this opportunity. But what's even more interesting, especially in the work that I do, is how this will look going forward in the future. So they're actually projecting or proposing to have revenue share across the schools for the athletes. And so it's going to be less of a roster number, the number of athletes on your team, and more of a budget, almost like a GM perspective of how much you can use to recruit to bring more athletes on your team. I think when we bring this back to a gender perspective, what's most interesting is what this will do for Title IX. And so, audience, I don't know if you all are familiar with Title IX, but it's only 50 years in existence. It actually celebrated its anniversary this year, and it's basically the notion to remove discrimination against women when it comes to student athletes in the NCAA. And so breaking this down a little bit further, right now, whatever men get from an institutional level, female athletes are supposed to get the same. What we've talked about earlier is NIL is not equal across gender lines. And so with this revenue share model of the work that has been external through the collectives coming internal to the institutions, what will that do? How will that shape women's sports, women's ability to get compensated, and or the failures that may happen because of all those different nuances? And so I always tell people right now, the way that NIL is shaped in the landscape more broadly, there's just more questions than answers. But I'm excited every day to dig in deeper to try and get closer to those answers.
You know, really, and I'm, you know, listening to you and I'm thinking about the NCAA and, you know, how deep are their pockets? If they're, you know, if athletes are able to go back and, you know, to 2016 or be able to, you know, obviously submit for past compensation, that's going to add up to be a lot of money that they're going to end up paying out, right? So that's one, fascinating point there. So thank you for sharing that. And then also number two, Title IX, absolutely. And if our audience is interested, you know, there is a Women Got Game episode that we did focus on Title IX. So I'm so glad that you did bring that up, because I think all of these are moving pieces and parts when you're talking about NIL. And that's where I think it's the complexities. Most people might think it's you know, very straightforward. But as we've been mentioning, it's just really not. So I'm so grateful for you to, you know, fill us in and share your research. And also, I guess the next question would be, what are the biggest challenges that athletes, particularly women, face when navigating NIL opportunities?
It all really starts with the education around the sport in and of itself. I think it's important for athletes to be sponges, to learn as much as you can in terms of just what are the rules, who are the people, the key stakeholders within your organization, and how to activate. And then I think we alluded to earlier, I've spent my research on this first study talking to specific athletes like the two that you connected me with for a total of 21 female athletes. And some of my findings around that really center on the importance of three themes. One is being very mindful of your brand. It's important, and it's what is marketable when it comes to securing and soliciting NIL deals. The second is really around, it takes a team. And so when I was alluding to earlier, getting that information may be difficult. You may not know where to go, but there's NIL agents like you, Sophia, that can help navigate that situation for athletes. There's compliance team members that are part of your institution. There's your family, there's your friends, and there's just a wealth of information that is starting to flood the internet to stay connected. And so, you know, ultimately, by focusing on your brand and then building out this right support network, we can grow women's sports across the board. And we've seen this model work, as you mentioned earlier, with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. They became names. They became people that you either love to hate or hated to love, right? And then because of that, they built a strong team around them, the team that works for them. And then now we're seeing record-breaking results from both the NCAA tournament outperforming men's basketball for the first time. Just a quick anecdote, like the NCAA March Madness, women weren't even considered a part of that branding until recently. So just the craziness that now the brand is now absorbed by women is beautiful. And then we're seeing that again with actual recent data this month that came out regarding the WNBA and how it's surpassing men's sports when it looks at engagement, which means people are here. They're caring about women's sports. They're active within that space, and that's a marketer's dream. And so bringing all these pieces together, what could that do? How could that really transform women's sports in the future?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And, you know, you mentioned it. You're right. A lot of these female athletes, they become a brand. They are the brand, and it's you know, it's fascinating, and not just women's basketball, but we're seeing it in women's soccer, lacrosse, golf, and all other sports, we, you know, have the tendency, obviously, the needle's moved the most probably within women's basketball, which is fascinating to see. But I think a lot of other sports, even swimming, diving, you name it. I mean, I think we're seeing it across the board. And as you mentioned, you know, with better media contracts and more exposure and people, you know, wanting to go to games and have that experience at arenas, I think it's just been amazing to watch. So it's like you mentioned in the beginning, it's never been a better time to be involved with women's athletics or sports as a brand or even as an athlete or a college coach. There's a lot of cool opportunities there. But what do you think are the long-term implications of NIL for women's sports? Are there any concerns that we haven't fully addressed yet?
I think that the long-term implications will really center on what happens with the House settlement in April and what that means towards Title IX. On one hand, it looks like it could be the rabbit hole for litigation and just continuous imperfections around equity across the genders in sports. But on the other hand, it could be a leveling aspect where females are starting to get their fair share when it comes to sports, and the recognition and the engagement and the exposure is starting to match and keep up with that. So it's interesting. I do think there's more legislation to come. I think that, you know, right now this is just the beginning, but I don't foresee that it'll even be more cemented in what NIL, the landscape, will look like for maybe even 5 more years. I was reading an article earlier this week about just how institutions are now hiring these NIL manager roles and what that looks like. And so I think right now everyone's just really trying to figure it out. There are, from an institutional standpoint, they're trying to be safe and cautious and not, you know, not be against any kind of compliant rules. And then I think from a marketing and brand and business side or technology, they're trying to be innovative and first to market and try and catch the right wave at the right time, like Open Doors did. And so it's just something to just really keep an eye on. I know we talked about maybe having this chat, even what it'll look like 6 months from now, right? So this is just where it's kind of settling in as of now, but there's a lot to come on the horizon when April 7th comes.
Yeah, and it seems like it's a moving target, right? We don't know what we don't know yet. So as it evolves, it's one of the things I like to talk to you about is, you know, how do we create a movement and not just a moment? You know, we, you know, look at how female athletes can redefine how brands look, you know, at, you know, sports sponsorships and athlete partnerships. Let's talk a little bit more about that, because not everybody's going to give you a car. Let's just face it, right? And at all right. levels, you know, that's great. And, you know, people call me Oprah now because you get a car and you get a car and you get a car. So it's kind of like an in-house joke of NIL and being a local, you know, agent. But at the end of the day, there's so many opportunities where companies of all sizes can participate. And I think it's important to say that, you know, we need more of that type of activity. So let's talk a little bit about that and how you feel female athletes are redefining how brands look at them and opportunities to create partnerships.
It's funny. I say the same thing, actually. I want this to be a movement and not a moment. And so one positive emphasis in that direction is actually with Deloitte. They just released what is called the Athena Pledge, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but it's really centering on the charge and the call to action to invest in women's sports. And the data is there. So when we think about NIL, it's really in this influencers, creators ecosystem of like the gig economy. Well, a lot of times influencers may be self-appointed influencers, whereas athletes, they actually come with their own following. They have actual fans. And so their engagement level is that much more significant. And so what I think that can be the catalyst towards ensuring that this is a movement and not a moment is mapping our spend, putting our money where our mouth is. So So when you're seeing a lot of times the ads that come on or the Instagram posts, engage with it, but also go to that site and make a purchase on behalf of that athlete, because when they are actually driving revenue, it'll continue the momentum and allow not only the businesses to grow, the athletes' brand and recognition to grow, but then the whole industry in and of itself will grow. We'll have more Caitlin Clarks and Angel Reese's. We'll have more access and exposure. We'll have more funding so that they're not flying on charter flights or on commercial flights. And so I think the biggest lesson that, or biggest takeaway we could take from something like this, is actually supporting this effort. So, you know, a lot of times when it comes to the male athletes, they're having NIL deals dropped in their lap. Most of the times when you're seeing women athletes, it's very opposite. They're strategic, they're intentional, they're working to get to it. So let's support them, let's empower them, let's encourage them, and let's do so in a way where they're showing their impact and their value so that we can continue this going forward.
Can you offer some actionable tips and best practices for female athletes that may be listening today, and how they can engage with NIL opportunities?
Absolutely. I think it'll reiterate just some of the things I've said a little bit earlier from just the findings that I had from my first study. So this is actionable things from female athletes actually experiencing the NIL universe. Build your personal brand and build it early. Don't start, you know, don't wait and try and start your brand once you think you hit a certain point. Platforms and social media are important when it comes to a brand accepting or considering you for an NIL deal. Be authentic to that brand. So be who you are, but build that brand, build it early, and start increasing your following online so that you are positioning yourself for high quality deals. Assemble the right team. It really takes a team. As student athletes, you're probably swamped with all the things. And so being able to have people, trusted advisors on your team who can help support you in that and help you navigate is important. There are so many things when it comes to contracts, to compensation, to taxes that you don't want to miss a step on. And so that team can be as extensive as a right hand like Sophia on your side to manage all the things as an NIL agent, all the way to the simplicity of working with someone on your campus who is there to support your NIL effort.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I think you're right. It sometimes does, it's more complex. You need, I like that you said partnerships. It's not just one person that can navigate that for you. I think sometimes it's, you know, from a public relations standpoint and, you know, even looking at, you know, how do you create your brand, it does take a lot of work and commitment, but to be authentic, right? You never want to be, you know, not authentic with your brand because it never comes out right from a campaign perspective. Or, you know, I think student athletes need to align with some of what their belief system is and what they feel comfortable representing as well. And one of the things that, you know, I did want to mention is if you could issue a call to action for local brands and sponsors that may be listening in our audience, you know, to step up and support women's athletics, you know, in regions, you know, like ours. I'm in Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan. You know, what would be a great call to action right now that you could just ask for us right now?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is invest in female student athletes. The data's there, it's proven, and it'll garner fruitful results. And so, you know, I think it's really important to lean in and take that journey and watch where it could go. It's just important in terms of women's sports and the growth and the visibility that comes with it and will continue because you're a part of this ecosystem. So don't get left behind, because, as I mentioned, Deloitte has an entire pledge that is talking about getting brands, getting companies to sign up to invest in women's sports, and it's getting great traction. And so this, hopefully, as we mentioned, is a movement and not a moment. But don't let either one of those leave you behind, because people are taking women's sports seriously. They're investing in it, and the results are there. The data is matching.
Well, that's great. And, you know, and I think it can be not only in monetary times, but it can be in trade agreements. It can be in many different forms. And I think, you know, we've touched upon a lot of that. But I think it really does give a brand, if you would agree, an opportunity to stand out. Because I think a lot of times, you know, brands are lost in the noise. And I feel personally, from my experience and what I've seen, that if you select a female athlete that is, you know, again, a great representative of your brand, I think it does move the needle for your business, and it speaks a lot for your brand as well.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's what I mean. The data is reflected there. I've actually started on my second study, which is really diving a little bit more into this support network that I uncovered within basically the Ackerson ripple effect of it's important about your brand, then it's important about having a support network, and then how that'll grow the industry. And so some of the insights I'm starting to get from this network is that it's even easier and better working with female athletes. And it's maybe not a surprise, but very tangibly, you know, the athletes, the female athletes are proving to be more intentional, more organized, more structured, more dependable, more reliable. Just insert here and they're more than. And so I think, you know, this isn't just a plea, it's a reality. It's something that is true, and there's people getting on board, and you'll be left behind if you two don't do the same.
Well, before we wrap up today, Carolyn, what would you like to tell a young woman listening to the show about creating a career within the sports industry? Kind of what advice would you give them?
I think that the advice I would give is be open and be curious. Be open to all of the possible opportunities. You just never know what type of roles or opportunities exist within sports, because it's a constantly evolving space, which goes directly into be curious. Constantly stay close to industry reports or newsletters, or just be a sponge of the industry, because it's not stagnant. Everything is changing, constantly evolving. And so the more you're abreast of what's going on, the more opportunities will find you and you'll find them. And so continue to be open and be curious.
Well, it's been great to speak with you today on this particular topic, and you really did shed a light on NIL for our audience today. And Carolyn Ackerson, you got game.
Thank you so much, Sophia. This has been fantastic, and I appreciate the work that you're doing to continue to move women's sports forward, and I hope listeners will do the same.
As you've heard, the NIL landscape is transforming collegiate athletics, offering unprecedented opportunities for athletes to profit from their brand. Now is the time for women athletes to step up, seize opportunities, and leverage NIL to grow their personal brands. NIL is about more than just endorsements. It's about creating a legacy, building a network, and paving the way for future generations of women in sports. It offers athletes to connect with local businesses, engage with platforms that align with their values, and make their mark. Join us on our next episode when we talk to two University of Toledo women's basketball players about name, image, and likeness. I want to give special thanks to my guest, Carolyn Ackerson, and to my executive producer, Chris Pfeiffer. I'm your host and producer, Sophia Fisher. Feel free to visit us at WGTE.org/womengotgame.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.